Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hello and welcome to the Autosport Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas. It was qualifying day at the Russian Grand Prix today, and that's the subject for our latest bite-sized podcast, where we've got a lot to pack in because it was an incident-filled session. The main action happened in Q2, where Mercedes found itself in an unusually pressurised position as it tried to get through the middle segment on the medium tyres to gain a strategic advantage for the race's opening stint. Valtteri Bottas had to have a second run as he was already vulnerable to times improving with track evolution after his first go, while Lewis Hamilton had his first lap deleted for running wide at the final corner. His second lap was then disrupted by Sebastian Vettel crashing his Ferrari and causing a red flag, with Hamilton then only making it around to start his timed lap when the session restarted with a second to spare. But he did make it through to Q3 despite all that drama. He duly took his 96th F1 career pole, while Bottas was ultimately pushed off the front row by Red Bull's Max Verstappen, who stunned Mercedes with his final Q3 lap. And that's not all the intrigue at the front, because Mercedes had to send Hamilton back out at the very end of Q2 on the softs. Bottas and Verstappen will start the race on the mediums, which means the world champion will be vulnerable in the first stint as well as on the long run to turn one. So, joining me to discuss all of that and much more still is Autosport's F1 reporter Luke Smith. Well, Luke, that was an unusually riveting session, considering it nevertheless ended with a Mercedes on pole position. What did you make of the chaos?
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah, as you say, I think it was a very, very exciting qualifying session, unusually so for Sochi. It's a track that I think is much, much maligned, I think. Even myself and JBL on the Friday podcast were sort of talking about how terrible it is for the most part, but actually qualifying today really did deliver. I thought it was lots of intriguing storylines coming out of it. I think that jeopardy and that drama we saw surrounding Mercedes in Q2, we never see them miss a beat normally, so to see that kind of pressure be put on them, although it wasn't self-induced because obviously they could never foresee the red flag coming, that I think was really, really fascinating to see. And I think it's actually set up quite a tantalising race for tomorrow, which I will say with bated breath, given it is Sochi and it is the Russian Grand Prix, given its historical record. But I think there's reasons to be optimistic.
Yeah, well, I agree with you there, but I disagree with you on whether Mercedes put itself under pressure. I don't think the team did. I think its drivers put them under pressure, because Lewis Hamilton was very, very fast on his first run on the mediums in Q2, but he goes just too wide at the final corner, and that meant his time was deleted. Valtteri Bottas just wasn't fast enough. He left himself, as I said, vulnerable to the track evolution, is what the team was saying, while they had to send him out again. So no, of course they couldn't have foreseen what happened with the red flag, but that only cost Hamilton. Bottas still managed to get through. But yeah, it was an unusually scrappy session for the team. I think that they still reacted as well as they could. I think they've probably maximised everything that they could. But there were certain bits where you could hear them as well over the radio, Lewis Hamilton and Pete Bonington, not disagreeing, but
Mercedes having to be quite firm with Hamilton and say, no, we can't do X, Y, Z because there are very good reasons. And we've got confirmation of why those things happened. Because, Luke, you went to Toto Wolff's remote Zoom call press conference. What was the explanation? Because basically, Hamilton came on the radio even after his time had been deleted and said, I want to carry on going. I've got the medium tyres on. Why can't I stay out, essentially? I wanted to get a banker lap in because just in case something mad happened, as it ended up doing. But he couldn't do that. And what was Wolff's reason why?
Simply because they didn't have the fuel in Lewis Hamilton's car. They'd only fueled him for one time lap. And a similar thing happened in Q1 where he had his first lap time deleted. But because there was enough fuel in the car to go for another push lap, he was able to do that. And basically it didn't cause any kind of similar issue. This time around, though, as you say, running on the medium tyre, you are already susceptible to losing time compared to the soft runners. Therefore, you're obviously going to run that car a lot lighter than you perhaps normally would and never envisage having to go for a banker lap. So they only had enough fuel in the car for one time lap, which is why Hamilton, despite his pleas saying, look, keep me out, let me go for another lap, they simply couldn't because there just wasn't any fuel in the car. So that was kind of forced basically on Mercedes' hand that they had put everything on Lewis, nailing that one lap. And unfortunately, as you said, ran a little bit wide at turn 18. And that meant that his lap time was scrubbed and then ultimately put them under pressure.
Yeah, it wasn't the only bit of pleading that Hamilton ended up doing, as we'll come on to. But you mentioned the Q1 incident because that came up after the race in the press conference. There was a little bit of confusion about what was going on because Hamilton was actually summoned to see the stewards over the fact that he had basically cut the curve early on in Q1. It's right at the very, very, very start of the session. The reason for the confusion in the press conference was simply that he had come straight from doing his TV interviews, hadn't seen the bulletin, obviously hadn't gone to see the stewards there. But yeah, he essentially that happened to a lot of drivers. It was interesting talking to some of the senior engineers after the session. Basically, the wind turned around almost 180 compared to FP3. So there was a big tailwind charging into the first big stop at turn two. Caught out a lot of drivers. You know, they suddenly had to completely refine their braking points and things like that. And Williams's George Russell, we saw at the very, very start of the session, just go out there, get a sight lap on the mediums. The team said he had absolutely no intention of setting a time on those. He just wanted to understand what had changed. And it worked out very well for him. They said that absolutely contributed to him getting into Q2 for the first time since the Belgian Grand Prix. But Hamilton, Luke, no further action taken from the stewards.
Yeah, in the end, so it's the same for Nicholas Latifi, Kevin Magnussen and Romain Grosjean. They were all investigated for the same thing as well. Track limits at Sochi, it's always been a thing because there's sort of endless runoff area, basically. And they issued instructions on Thursday, as we've seen in previous years in Sochi. They've got the orange bollard set out at turn two so that if you miss the curb and miss the apex, you have to sort of take this escape route to make sure you don't gain an advantage and safely rejoin the track at turn three. The stewards deemed that Hamilton nor any of the other drivers mentioned they had not done that properly. They had not taken that escape route. They did investigate it. They did talk to the drivers, deemed that no advantage would be gained, therefore there was no point giving them a penalty because there was nothing to really sanction. They all rejoined the track safely, so that's all okay. And they were reminded that if you were to do this in the race tomorrow, you would land a 5-second time penalty, which they all acknowledged. So yeah, a slap on the wrist, just something for them to bear in mind, really. But in the end, it wasn't enough to spoil the party for Hamilton.
No, it's interesting. You sense that the reason why they were all summoned and the decision was given, even if it was no further action, was that they wanted to make it clear about it's the race that matters, because obviously their times were deleted in Q1 and that, you know, it's not like it had an effect on the session result. But yeah, Luke, coming back to the end of Q2 and Lewis Hamilton pleading, because I went along to the remote top three official FIA press conference and I asked Hamilton about, first of all, about the communication that was going on between him and the team. He mentioned at certain points, you know, he felt, I think he was referring to himself more about a little bit of panic, said he had to calm his heart rate down, just refocus and go again in Q3. But I said to him, you know, was there any discussion at the end of Q2 where we saw lots of cars go out and wait in the pit lane? Lots of them were able to turn their engines off and sit there for a few minutes. Doesn't matter, you know, you're not putting any more stress through the power unit. But Mercedes didn't do that. And when they did come out, Hamilton was on the softs, which has, as we've said, created a very, very intriguing start to the race tomorrow. What was Toto Wolff's reason for why Hamilton couldn't come back out on the mediums that he said he was pleading with the team in the press conference that to try and run those yellow wall tyres?
So he called it a necessary safeguard. He said it was important to basically get as much pace as possible on the car to ensure that if there was a slight mistake or anything, that he wouldn't be caught out or wouldn't drop out in Q2. the session restarted with 2:15, I believe, on the clock, and they said that they didn't want to fit mediums on the car, send them to the front of the pit lane queue and just wait for it to go green, because that would then make the tyres cold. And basically they just wanted to have as many bullets in the gun to make sure he could get through. And as you said, that has really compromised things for the race tomorrow. It's something that Toto Wolff himself recognised. I asked him and I said, how much of a challenge does this make for you guys now that you've got to offset these strategies between Hamilton and Bottas? And Toto said, really, it comes down to where things stand at turn, well, when they're sort of through turn three and into turn four, because obviously we've got the long, long run to turn two that Hamilton has already said he's expecting to get past. Obviously, the cars behind get such a big tow, as we saw last year with the Ferraris off the start. So I think there is that Mercedes really do have to think about how they play that race tomorrow, because normally they've got both cars on the same strategy. They're very strict about keeping their drivers on the same strategy. We saw that at Mugello when they denied Valtteri Bottas the chance to go on an offset strategy, but now they've been forced into it. So I think it's going to create a really fascinating prospect at the front of the pack, because all of the drivers wanted to avoid that soft tyre, and Lewis Hamilton, of all people, he's stuck with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because Bottas said in the pre-event press conference, you know, I asked him, like, you know, are you going to try that again? Are you going to say to them, I want the opposite tyres to Lewis? And he said, well, yeah, I'm going to continue and try and do that. It was interesting. I don't know whether Mercedes were, they sort of had the decision taken away from them at Mugello in the fact that they saw a safety issue on Bottas's tyres, and that's why they had to bring him in first before Hamilton. And then they were just like, oh, he's ended up on the same tyres. No, it wasn't quite like that, of course, but they put him, ultimately they ended up on the same tyres. But I just want to very quickly go back to another reason why I think Mercedes couldn't send Hamilton out on the mediums and wait in the queue, or specifically why they didn't send him out to wait in the queue, was that basically they said that that their car, a lot of the power units, these hybrid engines, they can start up using the energy recovery systems. Mercedes can't do that. And interestingly, we saw Lance Stroll not make it through to Q3, because he did go out there, sat in the queue with the engine running. And I'm just going to read you a quote from Otmar Szafnauer, the CEO. Because basically the engine overheated. He says, Otmar says, unfortunately, the power unit was overheating and we asked Lance to switch the car off. So yeah, that's the reason why Stroll was pushed back into the pit lane. But it's just interesting to note that the Mercedes power unit, that doesn't have that feature. So anyway, a side note, a little bit of insight with the podcast there. But anyway, let's go back to qualifying. Let's go back to the race start, as you were saying, Luke. I think this has saved what could have been. I mean, it still could be a really dull race. It could. I think overtaking is going to be very, very hard. Notoriously tough, as Williams, Dave Robson put it in his medium session today, to overtake. So, it could still be very boring. But with Hamilton starting on a different strategy to Bottas and Verstappen, who's second, he's really up against it now. In fact, he talked of he's going to have to go away and just try and think if he can do anything with a different strategy to help out. Because basically, Pirelli say the fastest way is to start on the softs and then go on to the hards. But the softs will wear out faster than the mediums. So eventually there's going to come a point where Verstappen and Bottas will be able to stay with Hamilton and then will be quicker than him as his tyres give up. So it's sort of like, yeah, it's the fastest way for the majority in terms of starting on the softs, because that's what, you know, you ultimately would do. But Mercedes had so much pace in hand, as did Red Bull in the end. They gambled a little bit. They sent Verstappen back out on the softs at the end of Q2, but very, very urgently told him to abort the lap so he could have the strategic advantage. But yeah, do you agree with that? Do you think it's potentially saved the intrigue at the front?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really, really promising. I think we saw last year how exciting it could be when you've got two very evenly matched teams, as we had with Mercedes and Ferrari. And I think the tactics Ferrari used at the start, sort of basically trying to slingshot and get the slipstream with their cars to get ahead, because they knew how important that would be. Mercedes, I think they will obviously be thinking about that, sort of thinking, well, how can we sort of position our cars and make sure that we don't lose the lead to Max Verstappen, and that we do keep both of our cars, and well, hopefully get both of our cars in front us moving up from third. But then I think it also really creates an interesting sort of scenario for them, where they are managing, well, do we want Hamilton in front because he's on the softs and therefore it's better running him in clean air? Bottas will obviously run longer. If Bottas is leading ahead of Hamilton off the start, would they consider sort of putting in team orders and saying, Valtteri, it's James, Lewis on a different strategy, let's get him ahead, or what? I don't know. I think that is going to be really fascinating to watch. And I think that, I asked Wolff about the challenge, and he said, no, like, he said, I'd love it if I had both my drivers at the front with the same tires on and the same strategy. He said, but that's not the case, but we'll manage it and it's all okay. But I do think that it could really be a bit of a headache for Mercedes, because I think that with Verstappen lurking, and it really depends on the race pace, like how much he can stick with those cars, I think Mercedes have really got to make sure they don't trip over themselves. And as you say, because as that soft stint wears on for Hamilton and his tyres ultimately begin to expire, the medium runners will come back towards him. And then Hamilton, if he pits too early, will he then drop back into traffic? Like, has he got enough time on those softs, to build up enough of a gap to the midfield cars so that he can come out ahead of them in a nice gap in clear air? I don't know. So I think it's going to be really, really fascinating. And I think it's, as you say, it's given some hope to what is otherwise quite a straightforward race that is normally settled by whoever's leading out of turn two. I think this time around that it could be a real sort of a real slow burner, I think, through the first stint at least. And then once we sort of see where the strategy lies and how things are, I think that may ultimately decide it. But yeah, there is hope at least.
Definitely. Hamilton did raise the suggestion of maybe trying a two-stopper, but then he sort of quickly backtracked on that. So, you know, the length of the pit lane, the slow pit lane speed limit, it's not going to mean that. So I think we're fairly safe in assuming it will be a one-stopper. And for what it's worth, Max Verstappen sadly has said, you know, he doesn't see it being another 70th anniversary Grand Prix situation where he has the pace to put the pressure on the Mercedes drivers, even though he's starting ahead of the Mercedes car that is on the better strategy. But with that, you know, he's still a factor. He's still at play there. And I think that he was just brilliant today. He was totally on it in Q3. And ultimately, Bottas paid the price for that. What was your reaction when you saw Verstappen come through in second place?
I was very surprised. Like, he was talking down his chances completely on Friday. He said that it'll be tough for Red Bull to even be third. Said that Renault would probably be the team to beat there. And Daniel Ricciardo was very impressive through Friday. And Renault looked pretty good in FP3 as well. So then to see Verstappen's name not only pop up sort of third, but second of all places, I thought that was a real sort of testament to his performance. He said it was probably one of his best ever F1 qualifying laps. He was very happy with it. Christian Horner predictably sort of lauded on the praise as well, as one would if you're the team boss of Max Verstappen. Toto Wolff, he said about Valtteri Bottas, said that he just didn't feel quite as comfortable with the car as he had done through Friday's running. Obviously, Bottas set the pace in FP1 and FP2, and then said that after struggling a bit in FP3 and qualifying, said he sort of then fell back a little bit more as well. So I think that's definitely something that Mercedes will want to get to the bottom of. And ultimately, you've got one car in pole position by half a second. Valtteri Bottas has been in really good qualifying form recently. Let's give him credit where it's due. He's always been sort of within a tenth of Hamilton at the majority of the races of late. So for him to be so far off today, I think that maybe does point to him not quite feeling comfortable with where things were in qualifying. But that really shouldn't take anything away from Max Verstappen, because, yeah, a really mighty display to split those Mercedes. And I think he'll be hoping he can sort of hang on to their coattails at the start of the race tomorrow.
Definitely. Just on Verstappen, he reckoned that some changes that Red Bull made going into Q3 really paid dividends. So fair play for them. On Bottas, I think you're right, Luke. I think that gap is pretty unusual, considering we've seen the sort of qualifying form of the two Mercedes drivers lately. And it's just there's two things. One, this is another opportunity where Lewis Hamilton is on the back foot and Bottas hasn't capitalised. But Hamilton has historically been very good at being able to lock away things that are going badly and refocus and come out and deliver at the very end of qualifying. However, with Bottas, as you say, I think there are a lot of factors in terms of, you know, why things didn't quite go right today for him. As we mentioned, you know, the wind turning around into qualifying compared to what it was in all three of the practice sessions, that caught out a lot of drivers, as you said, contributed to the cars at the start going off across turn two. But also, you know, there's just the factor of that can't be underestimated, is that there isn't a lot of running this weekend. There's no Formula 3, there's no other support series, and that Sochi track is very rarely used anyway. So it's a very low grip surface. It is sort of changing. The asphalt is becoming rougher. So Williams was saying that it's gone, you know, it's almost a more normal surface than what it was like when it came on the calendar in 2014, that famous race where Nico Rosberg basically did the whole race on one set of tires after locking up at the very start. Or it was the second set, of course. But it's just interesting that basically that's what catches out the drivers. You know, the track is also changing naturally. There's bumps appearing where before it was ultimately really, really smooth. And you know, maybe that all just conspired on Bottas this afternoon. But we are racing through what is supposed to be a bite-sized podcast, league. So I wondered if you'd picked out any other stars of qualifying.
I think Sergio Perez was very impressive again for Racing Point. You mentioned that Lance Stroll didn't make it through Q2 due to the engine issue, but even though he's running without the upgrades on his car this week. And I think Perez has been absolutely on it for Racing Point. I think really good on a weekend where we had the comment he made on Thursday about the team sort of hiding things from him and obviously questions about his future and where he's going to be next year. And I think after Stroll really having all the momentum at Racing Point recently, I think Perez did brilliantly today to be P4 on the grid. So I think, yeah, massive props there for him. I thought George Russell as well, again, another great display to get back into Q2. He said, Q2, I've missed you over the radio. It's quite a nice comment. And a really sort of mighty lap to get through. I think he's, again, just proving time and time again that he's such a future star. And really, a lot of people on Twitter, for example, saying afterwards, like, it's such a shame seeing him at Williams. And like, if he was in a top car, what would he be doing? And you're kind of inclined to think the same after performances like today. So, I would probably pick out Perez and Russell as my other two stars of qualifying. Was there anyone else who caught your eye?
The other obvious one is Daniel Ricciardo getting the Renault up to fifth, but had he replicated his Q2 lap in Q3, he would have beaten Perez to P4. So I understand that when our colleague Jonathan Noble asked this pointed this out to Daniel Ricciardo in his press conference, he got a jokingly single digit response into the camera on the laptop. But obviously we know what Ricciardo's like when it comes to interviews. But yeah, still a good lap. It's one of those things with Renault that they've shown a lot of potential on Fridays and then haven't just missed out when it comes to Saturday form. And then obviously that has a knock-on effect in the race. I mean, they were very good in Belgium. That didn't happen. They were sort of on it all weekend. But yeah, it's just interesting there. And noted yesterday they were deliberately not getting carried away with Ricciardo finishing second and third in practice because they were very aware that this could happen. But still, nevertheless, a very good result for Ricciardo and for Esteban Ocon as well. Now, just looking at my script, I was going to ask you next about what sort of race we were going to look forward to, but we've covered that fairly well, Luke, I think. So let's end on a downward note for the team in question, and it's more misery for Ferrari. As you said, Sebastian Vettel crashed at turn 4, brought out the red flags. That means he starts 15th. But that's one thing. He clipped the curb, he crashed. That's an obvious issue for Ferrari and for what happened. Clearly, he crashed. But it was Charles Leclerc getting knocked out in 11th and not making it through to Q3 that sort of almost caught the eye more, because he seemed to be particularly frustrated at what had gone on there and how the team arranged itself and his final laps in Q2. So yeah, what was Leclerc particularly annoyed about, Luke?
So he wasn't pleased about the gap to Esteban Ocon. He said that he was basically asking about the margin to Ocon, and they said, oh, he's sort of got 1 or 2 seconds. So that was sort of like putting him under a little bit of pressure and sort of thinking, well, I need to really like push on and where he was placing his car and all of that. But in the end, it turned out to be a bigger gap. So he said he felt quite angry, quite emotional after the session. We obviously heard him sort of yelling over team radio when he found out that he'd been knocked out. So I think that he was, once he's calmed down a little bit, probably understand it a bit more. Ferrari said, they said after the session that Leclerc had the pace to get through to Q3. They need to understand why. That seems to be squarely on them. And with Vettel as well, they said that the crash has left his car with considerable damage, so it's going to be interesting to see the repairs that they'll need to complete ahead of the race tomorrow. But another downward day. I think that after looking at practice on Friday, Ferrari were looking maybe a little bit better than they have been at recent races, and then to resign themselves to another double Q2 knockout, it's a bit of a disappointing day for them.
Yeah, I think they'll be kicking themselves for not making it through to Q3. Just incidentally, I assume Leclerc is annoyed about that sort of that gap and the way he had to push on ahead of Ocon starting his lap, because basically tyre preparation is so key to getting a good time at Sochi. You know, we've seen that with the Mercedes drivers. Dave Robson at Williams explained very well that George Russell was sort of running in the middle part of Q2 by himself. He was only ever going to set one time, so they opted to go when there was no one else on the track, and it just meant he'd get the tyre preparation absolutely perfect. Because the key is basically to be starting sector 3 and have the tyres just going past their best at that point, because there's so much time to be found in the slower corners at the very end of the lap. So I presume that's what Leclerc is annoyed about. Well, Luke, we have blown right by our usual time limit for a bite-sized episode, but I think that's fully justified in what was a very interesting and action-packed session. So thank you very much for coming on tonight's episode, and thanks to everybody else listening along. Now, just before we go, we'd like to remind you that the latest issue of Autosport magazine came out on Thursday and is available on the supermarket shelves and in newsagents, as well as on the doormats of subscribers. There'll be a new issue of the magazine for you to pick up every Thursday, packed full of news, analysis, and the usual stunning photography. And of course, if you want unlimited access to Autosport from the comfort of your home, visit autosport.com/plus to find out how to subscribe to our digital package. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Autosport podcast.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
I love the playoffs.
Anything can happen.
But the best part? It's like bonus football. And bonus football means betting bonuses with Gambit DC. For a limited time, you can get boosted deposits by 57%, up to $1,000 on the Gambit DC app, and up to a 57% multi-sport parlay boost at Gambit DC retail locations. It's the most exciting time to be a fan, so make your play and get the home field advantage with Gambit DC. Limited time offer, terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.